Good evening, everybody. If we could all, ladies, please, thank you. Good evening. I'm Alexander DeGuise. I'm a doctoral student here at McGill, and I'm also an administrator in the Integrated Program of Neuroscience. I would like to welcome you to the Emerging Leaders mini-conference tonight. Our goals today, we have three kind of key goals. First, meet other students. You can meet, get to know people that you might not know already. We want to, number two, develop important leadership qualities by taking part in leadership workshops. And finally, we'd like to provide you with the opportunity to discover involvement opportunities in Montreal and with various student organizations. So our aim is to ensure that that your experience at McGill will be memorable, positive, and beneficial to your personal development. Okay, so it's not just about classroom learning, but development as individuals, as community members, as community leaders. As you've seen on the schedule, we're going to start the conference with a keynote address from Dr. Richard Costner, after which you will have a choice of three workshops to attend. You choose one of the workshops, and there will be signs directing you, signs outside, and at the end I will give you kind of directions on which way to go for the various workshops. These workshops are going to be led by McGill staff and student leaders, who all have significant experience and knowledge to share with you, and we encourage you to engage with the speakers and engage with the content. Okay? After the workshops, there's going to be a break and pizza, which is always nice, followed by the Next Steps workshops. The Next Step workshop is led by student facilitators and is designed to give you the opportunity to create practical steps using the tools and ideas from tonight's conference for your individual path in terms of leadership and leadership development. One more note, take advantage of the Next Steps workshop at the end of the day to keep in touch with people that you'll meet today. Finally, please make sure to sign out at the end of the conference, as those who attend the full conference will see this on their CCR, which is your co-curricular record, which is available via my involvement. So you'll have a record of your participation, basically, and you can put that on your CV or whatever you need to do. So just a quick personal note. As I'm sure you already know, there is a lot more at McGill to gain from than just your classes, okay? Many friends that you will make here will become lifelong friends. From experience, I've made friends with people across the university via my leadership roles that I've played, and I have now friends in the University of Hong Kong, in the University of Amsterdam, so I have places to stay around the world if ever I feel. So, develop these friendships, develop these relations. In the same vein, the co-curricular, extracurricular activities that you engage in will provide you with great memories and opportunities for transformational experiences that lead to developing your life and leadership skills. In my case, through my experience as I was the VP Academic of the Graduate Student Society for a number of years, I was a student senator, I was the graduate student representative on the Academic Policy Committee, which is the highest academic committee in the university. I came to really have a deep understanding of the challenges that our university is faced with, that my fellow students were faced with, across disciplines, not just within your own department, but you get to know people from the psychology department, from engineering. You get to know a diverse group of people. And you know what? These experiences, actually, I'm now an administrator at McGill, and these experiences were extremely valuable in preparing me to be an administrator. So they're not only there's lifelong lessons and lifelong learning that could come from being a leader at McGill. So as I mentioned before, our keynote speaker today is Dr. Richard Costner. He's a professor of psychology here at McGill, where he's conducted research on personality and human motivation for over 25 years. Richard has in fact published over 125 scientific articles, and his recent work focuses on how to effectively set and pursue personal goals. Dr. Costner received the 2007 Canadian Psychological Association Award for Excellence in Teaching, and he subsequently won the Principal's Prize for Excellence in Teaching from McGill in 2008. We are delighted to have him here today. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Costner.
Thank you very much. Okay, my slide should appear momentarily. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, thank you very much for that introduction. I just want to say this sounds like a wonderful conference. It's the kind of thing I wish I had done when I was a university student. I was not as engaged as I could have been. I'd also like to begin by saying that when I was asked by Joan to do this talk, I was a little hesitant and a little reluctant because the word leadership is not something that I associate with myself, so that I don't usually think of myself as a leadership type or someone who might emerge as a leader. However, I do research on motivation. I do research on personality, and because I've been teaching about personality for the last several years, I think I now understand why I've never been totally comfortable with the idea of being a leader. And I think it comes down to a particular personality trait that all of us can identify and all of us probably understand pretty well. And so I'll talk about that, and my goal is, to some extent, I'm speaking to those of you in the audience who also are not sure whether you're the kind of person who should pursue leadership or who would be recognized by others as someone who could be a good leader. I'll be distinguishing in this talk between two key issues in leadership research: who emerges as a leader, and then who's effective as a leader. And it turns out it's often two different people, or two different kinds of people. Okay, so that's my background. I wanted to begin just with some examples of leadership and trying to figure out who should be the leader or who will make a good leader. And an example that I followed for the last year is the Montreal Canadiens, a historic franchise. I'm from New York City, but I've become a fanatic Montreal Canadiens hockey fan. And last year, they didn't have a captain. And a lot of people on the sports radio shows said, come on, they need a captain. If you're going to have a good team, you need a captain. It's a tricky issue because their goaltender actually is the heart of the team, but a goaltender can't be the captain. But just this week, they decided to let the players choose, and the players selected Max Pacioretty, and they didn't select P.K. Subban. And it may be the right choice, but it may not be. And I'll give the talk, and then I'll come back to that example. Also, you probably realize there's a federal election going on. It's been going on for a long time. It's going to continue for another month. But many of us are trying to figure out who is the best leader, and we may base our decision on which party to vote for on the basis of who the leader is. Of course, you know, I don't want to give away my political views, but with Stephen Harper, the issue is maybe he's been a leader too long. He's tired. He can't do it anymore. With Justin Trudeau, all of you realize this. The issue is he's just not ready yet, according to the Conservatives. And with Tom Mulcair, I didn't really know what the issue is, but in the leaders' debate, the concern was that he may come across as angry, and then he was too calm, and they said, no, be angry again. But finally, I want to talk about what happened today, which is Pope Francis visited Washington, and he met Barack Obama, and these are two of the most unlikely leaders you could ever imagine. If 10 years ago you had said there'd be an African-American president of the United States and that there'd be a pope from Argentina, no one would have believed it. Okay, so now I'll get on to leadership. So all of us at some point in our lives become aware of the issue of, you know, am I a leader? Will others see me as a leader? I think it often happens in grade school around grade 7 or 8. So when I was in 7th grade, this is a picture of the 50 kids who were in my 7th grade Catholic school class. It was a 1 through 8 class. And in 7th grade, the first month, the teacher said, okay, we're going to have an election for class president. And she gave us ballots, and we filled it out. We weren't supposed to look. And then she counted them. And much to my surprise, I tied for the lead as the person people wanted to be president. I tied with a girl named Donna Fee, who's a really nice girl, much more competent than I would have been. But because we tied, the teacher said, okay, why don't you two leave, and we'll figure out who is the real winner. And so 5 minutes later, she called us back, and she said, okay, Donna, you're going to be the class president. And I was so relieved that I was not chosen as the class president. 2 years later, I go off to high school. It's a fairly prestigious high school. It's all boys. Again, it's a Catholic school. I'm really nervous because I don't know anyone else, so I don't say anything for the first month. I'm basically silent. At the end of the first month, they have an election, and the boys voted me class president. Because I was on the basketball team, I had to withdraw from the presidency, and I was never voted president again. But in both cases, I was kind of surprised that I was picked out, and I wasn't sure that I could do a good job or I was the right person. Now, as I said, when you're thinking about leadership, the first question is, who will emerge as a leader? Who will come forward and present themselves in ways so that others will say, yeah, I want them as the leader? Now, the next question is, who will actually do a good job and who will help move the group along? And what I would suggest is that it may be different people and it may require different kinds of personalities and skills. And the central issue with whether we're likely to emerge as a leader or not, I think has to do with a fundamental personality trait, which is extroversion, introversion. So you probably know that in personality science, they've identified 5 big traits. So they've taken all of the adjectives we use to describe other people, and they've boiled it down into 5 kinds of consistencies in social emotional behavior that capture the ways in which we vary personality-wise. The trait that you've all probably heard about, I'll tell you about the other ones later, is extroversion, introversion. It's the superstar of the big 5 traits. And it's one that pretty early in our lives, we have an idea of whether we're on the extroverted end of the dimension or the introverted end. So it's a bipolar dimension. And at the high end or at the extroverted end, it has to do with being outgoing, sociable, and assertive. Whereas at the other end, the introverted end, those of us who are more introverted, we tend to turn inward. We focus more on internal thoughts, feelings, and moods rather than seeking out external stimulation. So here's some items. You could go online and you could assess your level of introversion and extroversion. My guess is you probably don't need to do that because you probably already have a pretty good sense of, okay, I'm an extrovert. Or I'm an introvert, or I'm in the middle. But here are some of the items. If you love to go to big parties, if you're always chatting, if you like to be the center of attention, if you act quickly, if you move quickly, it's more likely you're at the extroverted end. On the other hand, if you like to keep to yourself, if people tell you that, like when I was a kid or a teenager, my parents' friends would often say, silent waters run deep. meaning that I was kind of quiet, but there must be something behind that quietness. If you feel uncomfortable meeting people, and if you move in a slow way, you're more at the introverted end. So my guess is most of you have a sense of where you are, but there's actually a lot of research on introversion, extroversion, and what it's associated with. And a lot of this research involves things that would have to do with leadership. There's also some new thinking about what it means to be introverted and how we may have underestimated introverts and what they're capable of doing in terms of leadership. So here are some of the correlates. These are the research findings. I'll focus on introversion because my basic thesis is those of us in this room who are more at the introverted end, we're very likely to have thought, you know, leadership is something I'm not sure I'm ready for, or I'm not sure if I'm the right person. And we may even have gotten the impression from others that, you know, we're not suited for this. So the research, however, suggests some things that you might expect, so that introverts are less likely to talk when they meet someone, they make less eye contact, they have a less firm handshake, they study in secluded places, they have a narrower friendship network, but sometimes there's evidence that they actually have stronger, deeper friends. And there are some positive qualities, positive behaviors that have been associated with introversion. They listen more, and they respond very well when they have time to prepare and deliberate. And they excel at solitary work. Here's a secret for you. Most of your professors, they're introverts. You may wonder why when you knock on their door during their office hours, they kind of hide or they react in a surprise way. Most professors, we do solitary work, we're on our own, we tend to be more introverted. Okay. With regards to leadership, there are some specific outcomes that have been associated with extroversion and introversion. And when you first look at these, it looks like leadership should be the domain of the extroverts, and the introverts should stay away. But it's more complex than that. So extroverts seek out status, they're dominant, they're talkative, they're very good at building networks, they're very good at being charismatic and engaging others and making sure people notice them and listen to them. So in any kind of group, if there's going to be a decision about who do we want to move us forward, it's likely that the eyes will turn to the extroverts. Introverts, in fact, are significantly less likely to emerge as leaders in any group. However, if they do emerge as leaders, they're better at listening and implementing plans, and they're very good at being detail-oriented. So I think if you reviewed the literature on extroversion, introversion, you'd have to reach the conclusion, okay, if you're an extrovert, then you probably should orient toward leadership. If you're an introvert, you know, maybe it's not the right thing for you. You could help in other ways. This kind of thinking has been turned upside down in the last few years, and I think there's been a cultural movement in the United States, and I think it's spread to Canada as well, where people are rethinking introversion. And they're trying to consider whether there might be some powerful adaptive aspects to being an introvert. And there's even been suggestions that although introverts may not emerge as leaders in most groups, maybe they'll actually be the best leaders in some circumstances. So there was a Time magazine article about the power of shyness, and then there was a book by Susan Cain. She also has a YouTube video that's amazing. Over 1 million people have read this book, mostly introverts. And those of us who were introverted, when we read this book, we thought, oh my gosh, this is really speaking to me. This is showing how introverts have something to contribute and there are some special qualities. So let me outline two of the main points that Susan Cain makes. The first thing she says is that what you have to understand about introverts is that if they have time to prepare and if they can feel prepared, they actually can be very confident at things you wouldn't necessarily associate with introversion. So introverts can make very good public speakers. Some of your best professors, they're an introverted bunch to begin with, but some of your professors can be very compelling. And that's because they have time to prepare and think about what they're going to do. What an introvert can't do is step up and extemporaneously start talking. They would start flubbing and misfiring, and it just wouldn't go very well. But there is evidence that if those of us who are more on the introverted end, as long as we have time to prepare, we can do something that you would usually only associate with extroverts. Now, even more recently, they've suggested, research has suggested, that with certain groups, the extroverts will be less successful than the introverts. So there was a series of studies from a Stanford University researcher. One of the studies involved pizza places, and they measured the manager's personality. Are they introverted? Are they extroverted? But they also measured the personalities of the other people who worked there. And what they found was that if you have a group that's very proactive, very self-determined, very ready to suggest things and think of things on their own, an extroverted leader is not very effective because they want to be the ones talking and directing. So if you have a highly empowered, energized group of people, it seemed as if the extroverts were less effective as leaders. And in fact, the introverts were significantly more effective. And they measured this in terms of sales of pizzas over time. And the suggestion was, whether an introvert or an extrovert or someone at one end or the other end will necessarily be the better leader depends to a large extent on the kind of group you're talking about. Okay. Now, so there's this effort, and I think it's been successful, to help people think more thoughtfully about the distinction between introversion and extroversion, and to highlight how introversion can be very adaptive. And I'm sure some people would be reassured when they read this. However, I think most of us who are more introverted, we actually harbor a wish to be able to behave in a more extroverted way. So that if you grew up in the US or Canada, you learned early on that the ideal, the thing that your parents and teachers are probably hoping for, is behavior that's a little bit more extroverted and outgoing. So I know myself, certainly when I was a university student, I wanted to be more extroverted. I also wanted to be less neurotic and other kinds of things, but I definitely wanted to be more extroverted. So the next question I'd like to talk about, or the next issue I'd like to talk about, is how much can we change? And what kinds of things can help us change if we are interested in behaving in a more outgoing, extroverted manner? The first thing I would say is that there's very careful behavioral genetic research which suggests that to a large extent, our temperament and our personality are determined by genetic factors. So they do twin studies where they compare identical and non-identical twins who are raised by their biological family or who are given for adoption, and they could estimate how much introversion, extroversion is something that's heritable. And the estimate is about 50% of the variance. But that still leaves 50% that can be affected by other things. So they've even done studies where at the age of 1 or 2, you could see how kids respond to novelty, and you could measure physiological factors, or you could do brain imaging, and you can predict whether they're more likely to become shy and introverted or outgoing and extroverted. So it's, you can see it pretty early on. Now, having said that, there's other research that suggests that we can change. And in fact, the thing I really like teaching about when I teach Introduction to Personality is much of the research suggests that the age that most of you are at is kind of a magical period where some basic traits actually can change. And for those of us who wish that they might become more extroverted and might be able to act more assertively or be more outgoing, there's actually some evidence I'll show you that suggests that's very likely to happen for many of us. So there's been over 100 studies where they measured personality and then they longitudinally followed people from age 10 to age 30, age 20 to age 50, age 30 to age 70. And there was a researcher named Brent Roberts who did a quantitative meta-analysis of these 100 studies. And he was able to identify how much we're actually capable of changing on different traits at different points in our lives. Now, what I'm showing you here are two aspects of extroversion. You all know what extroversion is, but you can actually break down extroversion into social vitality, which has to do with the gregarious part of extroversion. So that's mostly about being with people, being outgoing, liking the company of others. If you always want to be around other people, and especially if you like groups, that's social vitality. But there's another aspect of extroversion that you can distinguish, and it's called social dominance. And it has to do with being self-confident, being able to assert yourself, and to be able to take action. These can be separated, and it turns out it's useful to separate these. Because when you look across the lifespan, it seems like we could change quite a lot on social dominance. But for social vitality, that doesn't change so much. So here's some graphs, and this presents, this shows you how much change in terms of standard deviation occurs from age 10 to 20 to 30 and so on. And you can see that from 10 to 20, there is some change in social vitality, but it's only like 10% of a standard deviation. But it is natural from 10 to 20 to become a little bit more group-oriented, wanting to be around other people. But it's not a dramatic change, and it stays pretty constant the rest of our lives. If you look at social dominance, though, again, this is about being assertive. This is about being able to go up to people and say, let's get together and do something. This is about being able to ask people out on a date. This is about being able to connect with others and do things that you're a little afraid of. It turns out that that increases dramatically, almost a full standard deviation from age 10 to age 30, or mostly happens between age 18 and age 30. And this is normative, so that all of us as a group, as we move from high school to university to young adulthood, there's I think, a favorable trend for us to feel more confident, for us to be able to assert ourselves more, and to do things that we used to be afraid of. So I see that as, you know, a wonderful, optimistic finding from personality research. Now, what the research also suggests is that not only can all of us generally make this transition to being capable of being more assertive, there are specific life events that can dramatically push us forward as well. So there was a German study where they tracked people from age 20 to 30, and the key thing they looked at was there a group of people in the sample who didn't have a romantic partner and who had never really had a romantic partner at age 20, but then who found someone in their 20s and they were still together at age 30. And what they were able to show is that the young people, and many of them were low on social dominance, they were high on neuroticism, the young people who didn't have a romantic partner as a 20, 21-year-old, if they found someone, and if they had a good, meaningful romantic relationship, at age 31, they looked dramatically different in terms of their personality. They were much lower on neuroticism and much higher on self-confidence, assertiveness, and social dominance. So I think the story that emerges from this prospective longitudinal research is that there are both normative and individual factors that can help us be more outgoing, confident, and assertive. Besides these two things, there's also evidence that even if, let's say, I didn't follow this normative trend, if I was more introverted, I wished I was more extroverted, but I wasn't changing that much, and I didn't meet the person of my dreams and have a great romantic relationship, there's other evidence that suggests that we can actually stretch our traits. And the research is by a man named Brian Little, who is a professor at Carleton and Harvard University. Susan Cain writes about him in her book, because he's won all kinds of awards for being a great teacher. But he's the shyest, most introverted person you would ever meet if you met him one-on-one. But he has this idea, he calls it free trait theory, that while we have certain fixed bits of personality, we can act out of character in the service of important personal goals. So that even though I may generally be introverted and I might not have that much confidence and I might not be too willing to assert myself, if there's a cause that I really care about, in Brian Little's case, he wanted to be a great teacher. He wanted to connect with students. So he found a way to push himself to do something that would typically be seen as more extroverted. You could see videos of him on YouTube. He's like a vaudeville performer. He should have a late night TV show. This really shy guy, when he's teaching, he's able to push himself beyond the limits of his personality. And he has evidence that all of us can do this. So that an important part of personality, besides our traits, are our values and our goals and the things we really believe in. And they can sometimes allow us to break out from our traits. There's one problem, though. It's very exhausting and depleting if you're an introvert to be acting like an extrovert all the time. It doesn't come naturally, it doesn't come easily, and it wears you down. So what Brian Little does, if he was doing a workshop like this, he would be a vaudeville performer for an hour and a half, and then he'd say, you know, I got to go away for a while. And he'd go and hide somewhere, or he'd go walk by the river. And what he says is, if you're an introvert and if you choose to pursue goals that are more suited for an extrovert, you can do that, but you have to be careful to take care of yourself. And you have to be careful to build in times where you could be on your own and you could recuperate and recharge. He says the same is also true if you're an extrovert. If you're an extrovert that has to do detailed work in the library all day, it's going to drive you crazy. And it's going to drain you. So you have to plan to go to a party at 5 o'clock. So we have to arrange our lives so that we can replenish our natural trait, even though it is possible to act outside of it. I'll skip this. Well, so I've told you about normative change. I've told you that specific life events can help us feel more self-confident, assertive, extroverted. It's not just meeting a romantic partner. There's other evidence that if you have success in your career, that can translate into more self-confidence. Another kind of research that I'll mention, I'm not so confident that this will work, but there's actually a researcher at Harvard Business School, Amy Cuddy, and she suggests that there are some small things we can do in our everyday life to prepare ourselves for evaluative situations where you might think you're at a disadvantage because you're more introverted rather than extroverted. And she has a program of research where she shows that if you take 3 to 5 minutes before doing an activity that requires confidence and self-assertion, if you take 3 to 5 minutes to pose in a powerful way, like Wonder Woman or Superman, if you do that, she's able to show that there's biological things that change, cortisol level, hormones, and that by assuming these power poses, you signal to your body that you're ready to be assertive. And she's done experiments where she has some people doing a low power pose, which is basically hunching down and being narrow, versus doing high power poses, and the people are randomly assigned to one or the other. She takes a number of biological, physiological measures, and then she has them do a job interview, or she has them do a public presentation. And she's able to show that going through this exercise of making yourself feel powerful in a bodily way will translate into presenting yourself in a more authoritative, confident way. I haven't tried that myself yet. So the question that I began with is, do I have the personality to be a leader? I would suggest for that many of us, the answer probably is not yet. But there's a lot of evidence that we can change, we can grow, we can develop, and that it's even possible to push ourselves when there's a cause we really believe in, to act in a way that's much more outgoing and like a leader. Myself, what I have found is that if it requires volunteering, I'm not that likely to emerge as a leader. But I have found as I've gotten older, I'm asked to do more leadership type things, and that I can, if it's something that I really value and care about, kind of make a go of it to be more outgoing and more confident and more assertive and to take the role of a leader. But what I feel particularly comfortable about and what I recommend to those of you who might be more on the introverted side and who haven't seen this transformation yet, where you're capable of being more outgoing and assertive, is to think about leadership not as one person, but as a group. So if you go back to the Montreal Canadiens, one of the reasons they've been successful for the last couple of years is they have a leadership core. They have 5 or 6 very good players who are also really solid in the locker room and who manage things, who keep the other players motivated, who handle crises. So in this picture, you see Max Pacioretty and P.K. Subban. And, you know, it's surprising that they went for Pacioretty. P.K. Subban is far more extroverted than Max Pacioretty. But the players decided Max would work better. With P.K., maybe he's too extroverted. I don't know. But there's a couple other players, Andrei Markov, who everyone thought might be the captain, but he has always indicated he doesn't want to be the captain. But he's still a really important part of the leadership team. And Thomas Plekanec is that way too. And in most organizations, in most departments, in most companies, there is a leader, but there's also a group of people around the leader who are responsible for making sure things move along. And I have found that, you know, I'm pretty good at that role. The other thing I'd like to highlight is that whether you can be a leader or not doesn't really speak to the issue of whether you can contribute or not. And most groups, most organizations, current research suggests they benefit a lot from diversity. A group that had only extroverts wouldn't be as effective as a group that has extroverts and introverts. They bring different qualities, different perspectives. The other thing I'd like to highlight is that extroversion isn't the only personality trait. When I was a university student, I thought it was the only one, and I thought I was lacking in extroversion. But in fact, there's five broad dimensions, and there's another one that's interpersonal and has to do with whether you'll get along with people. It's called agreeableness, and it refers to the tendency to have a concern for others, to have warm and trusting sentiments, and it mostly gets at how empathic and human you are. And the key with agreeableness is that it's what allows us to feel very comfortable in dyadic relationships. Extroversion is more about how you do in groups. Agreeableness gets at how you are in a one-on-one relationship. And it's separate. A person who's highly extroverted isn't necessarily high in agreeableness, high in this kind of empathic ability to connect with others. Obviously, though, in much of our life and in many of our interactions and many of the things we have to do, it's not just extroversion that's important. It's also your capacity to function in a dyadic way. And what I found, I'm 57 now, and I'm a professor, and I'm a researcher, and I have a group and a team. One of the things I've found is that I don't arrange things hierarchically. I don't try to build an empire where I'm on the top and I give commands and I organize things. I work dyadically with a lot of different people. And it's a way that's comfortable to me, and I've been able to be productive, even though I don't really fit with the extroverted norm. But there's other big five traits. Conscientiousness. You always need conscientious people in the group. Neuroticism. The opposite end of neuroticism is emotional stability, and it's great to have emotionally stable people, but it's also good to have some people who are freaking out all the time and saying, no, we shouldn't do that. We should do something else. No, I'm worried this will happen. And then openness to experience is the final one. So what I would suggest is that in terms of whether groups function well or not, it's great to have people with all different personality types. And I've also tried to argue that when we're thinking about leadership, though, a lot of it comes down to extroversion and introversion. And even though many of us who are introverts may not feel like it suits us, there is some evidence that we could do it well if we have the right kind of group. There's also evidence that we're going to develop our capacities. We'll be able to do things in terms of asking people, taking initiative that we weren't able to do a few years ago. And that if we have certain life circumstances that build our confidence, we'll even be able to do that more. So do I have the personality of a leader? It's a complex question, and I was just hoping to maybe give you some new thoughts about it. I do recommend that you look at the YouTube video of Susan Cain and also the video of Amy Cuddy. Thank you very much, and if you have any questions, let's see. Well, I'll stop there. Do you know if there's time for questions? One, what, how many? Okay, does anyone have a question? Yes. Yes. Yes, that's a really good point. So I've been talking about the extremes, and you know, let's say the 25% are introverts, 25%, but there's a lot of us, probably the majority, who are more in the middle, who sometimes feel like, you know, I'm an introvert, sometimes they feel like they're an extrovert. But what I was saying about the normative change and being able to do certain behaviors that are more self-confident and assertive, that also occurs for the ambiverts, not just the introverts. One of the interesting things about the normative change, and I found this out by catching up with my high school friends, I assumed that I had become much more outgoing and confident, and that my ranking in terms of extroversion might have gone from like the 10th percentile up to the 60th percentile. But what I found, in fact, is that some of my friends had also moved up. So it's a normative change, and there were things I could now do, but over the course of development, everyone tends to move in that direction of being able to do it more. But yeah, there are ambiverts or people who are in the middle who show some of both qualities. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, well, we'll stop there. And yeah, thanks.
So first off, a big, big thank you to Professor Costner for a very interesting talk. So now, on behalf of Campus Life and Engagement, I want to thank everyone here for their help in making today's conference possible. Most gracious thanks to all of our volunteers, our workshop presenters, our facilitators, our keynote speaker, and the staff. I'd like to thank you all for making McGill a more student-centered environment and for supporting students to realize their full potential here at McGill, in Montreal, and beyond. For those of you who are attending the Positive Mindset, we're going to go out the right rear towards the art building. For those of you attending the other sessions, we'll go out the left rear. One last point. Please ensure that you sign out at the end of the workshop so that you can receive the recognition for it. So thank you guys and have a great evening.